the strong and the bold who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years. This one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond are premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017 is officially Tiger Time.
We never reconcile.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And unlike the Adelaide Crows, I don't think either of us have been getting nightmares about the Richmond theme song.
No, I mean, I've been playing it repeatedly, but that's not for some therapy. I just play it repeatedly because it's a catchy tune. It makes me feel good.
And I got to say that Thursday night, stressful as it was, having the song at the end of the game is still pretty good fun, even if it's the new version.
Yeah. I just love having football back. Like, I really enjoyed watching the replay of this. I watched the third quarter again for the third time, just because it's just fun to have real football back, and it's really different to the finals. You know, there's more space. Round one brings its own particular challenges. The crappy umpiring that you know that they're going to enforce a few rules that were completely forgotten by round two.
To be honest, I was in such a warm, fuzzy haze about the flag unfurling, which was cool. Actually, we'll get to that some more later. But yeah, I'd forgotten about weird AFL umpirings, which despite Damien Hardwick's pleas to the contrary, was exactly a one-game phenomena. I think the AFL took one look at, 7 50-metres, 4 goals from 50-metre penalties. Maybe deciding the outcome on the basis of a horribly overzealous interpretation of the 50-metre protected zone, not such a good idea.
Exactly, but like those weird round one quirks aside, and it is different football.
You are only complacent about that because we won. If we'd lost, your brains would have been coming out of your ears as mine were during the game.
Oh, I completely agree. And actually, probably the crowd, maybe I wasn't there, but you know, the crowd didn't sound quite as outraged as it might have been if they weren't so drunk on Richmond happiness. Had there been sort of a bit more of the hunger and anger that the Richmond crowd was normally?
Look, at maybe not the hunger and the anger, but there was certainly stress. Like the
It was also confusing. I genuinely had no idea what was happening. And like, it's always harder to get outraged about a decision where you don't know what it was for.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much, if you've ever watched a game of rugby union, is every decision. Anyway, we digress.
That's true. At the ground, you could kind of work out, and I've spoken to about half a dozen people who had the same experience of some idiot sitting behind them with a Carlton scarf saying, oh, yeah, no, that decision was spot on. And the umpiring wasn't very good for the whole game. I think we got both Jack and Butler got goals from free kicks that weren't there. So it was a pretty rough night all round, and you need to pump the brakes on Charlie Curnow a little bit, as good as he looked, given, did he get 3 of the 50 metres?
He did. He kicked a few beautiful snaps. But, like, look, bottom line, like, the scoring was high. It was completely different styles of football from Carlton last year and Richmond 3 years ago. It was fun to watch. Like, it was just great to have it back.
Yeah. I still need some convincing on the fun part. It was fun when we got our game up and going, when we started to throttle them, when we got out by 20, 25, 30 points. That was all fun, I admit.
And the theatre, Nick, the scores are tied in the last quarter, and Dustin Martin...
I don't want theatre. I want the Colosseum. Give me Christians and Lions.
All right, Dustin Martin, stiff arm,
kick, I know that
kicks the goal, her goal. Like that is so Hollywood A grade sort of, you know, that's the sort of Rambo 6 when they've run out of ideas and they're just repeating the thing over and over again to appeal to the core believers. That was that moment. It was cliched, it was hackney, and it was beautiful when Dusty kicked that goal.
Yep. Because he'd missed three shots at goal before that, at least two of which you kind of assumed, like, it was a shock that he could miss goals. I think we've all been drunk on highlights and replays for months and months. Jack Graham missed a shot on goal. Townsend even missed two shots on goal. None of these things we're used to, but they are, as you say, they're football and they're back. It was fun. It was fun to be back at the football. It was a nice touch. The flag bearers, one of which you know, taking the flag around the ground and then raising the flag in the same spot that the cup was handed over. That was all really nice. It was just that it was followed by 5 goals in 10 minutes from Carlton, when we could have all used a little bit more warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, I mean, that was a stressful start. You know, them scoring 30-1 to start with, and yes, they got some cheap goals, but they were killing us statistically, in fairness. It was a rough start, but funnily enough, I've heard lots of people say they weren't really that worried. How much a flag can change things? Because, you know, let's face it, Carlton kicking the first 5 goals of a match back in the day against Richmond would have us all, you know, in the deepest pits of despair, questioning all our life choices. But we wrote it out, we ground them down, and we actually pegged the lead back quite early. It didn't take us that long at all. So, yeah, there you go. It's the new Richmond. And the new Richmond, one thing that was really pleasing for me, Nick, is, you know, I worry about our low scoring. We continued our high scoring form from the end of last year, which to me was very pleasing.
And we did it with a balanced attack. I mean, they picked that up on the commentary, and without Daniel Rioli, and with only the occasional cameo from Shai Bolton. So it was certainly not quite at full potential. But yeah, that was an encouraging thing from the game, that we played horribly, but we still had a ton of shots at goal. The game. I mean,
I'm not going to say we played horribly when we had 71 inside 50s. Like,
yeah, well, we played horribly in certain aspects of the game. Yeah, it would. I like, for those who are statistically minded, that, well, this is probably something that's fairly unique to me. But so the absolute record for more scoring shots in the opposition than and losing is about 10. So when we were at about 13 or 15 at certain stages of the game and the game was tied, yeah, I was stressed.
Let's face it, that is something that, if the one thing that really pushes your buttons is poor goal kicking. In fairness, partly
well, and when the opposition's converting so well because they're taking every shot from the goal square.
Exactly. Yeah, actually, Carlton didn't kick particularly well for goal. They just had really easy shots for goal. So, yeah, it was that was frustrating, and the 50s was frustrating. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was back and forth, and we wrestled it back. And it was just like, you know, I mentioned Dusty before. Once again, he was easily the best player on the ground by any sort of by any of the composite statistical measures.
Oh, I thought Cripps was, actually.
No, by both the AFL ranking and the champion data ranking, Dusty was much better. Because the thing about Cripps is, as you have pointed out, Cripps wasn't even the best rated champion data player on Carlton. Cade Simpson was.
Who was? Oh, Cade Simpson. Yeah. That was annoying.
Yeah. Well, is it really annoying that Carlton's best player is 33 years old?
Well, yes. True. I want to talk about the AFL ratings a bit later and take exception with their lowest-ranked Richmond player.
Okay. Now, where do you want to... How do you want to attack this game, Nick? Because one of the things I noticed was I think we missed Broad a bit. I think structurally it changed the back line.
That was one of my points as well, that we were a little bit less Swiss Army knife when it came to being able to match up on guys who were giving us a problem. Like that, when Wright outmarked Gloston, I was just shocked. He's genuinely good overhead normally. Look, he's prone to the occasional mistake, but very strong overhead. And he did have a number of strong contested marks, but yeah, we did. And I thought all of Shorten, Conqueror, and even for little bits, Corey Ellis all had moments off half back, possibly more in the Basher Hawley role rather than the Broad role. But yeah, we weren't quite as versatile in being able to swap onto a dangerous small forward.
Yeah, so let's break that into component parts. So I think the way I read the matchup is that Conqueror and Schultz were playing in the back line, and that Corey Ellis was playing more of the Prestia role. So you could debate that. But
in the first half.
Yeah, so Conqueror, this is partly, this is a bit of my pre-existing bias before the game, because Nick, I love Short. I think he's really, the way his evasiveness to break tackles, change direction, and kick long, I think that's really useful.
He's a really big meters gain player. He does the 55 meter shot for goal that drifts to one side is a bit his specialty as well, but. Yeah, he's a good player.
He's got potential. I think he's still flawed, but I really like him for his long-term ability. And just, it's only a one-game sample, so let's not get carried away. And Nick, could I just make a general point about round one? One of my favourite NFL podcasts calls round one overreaction round. And we all do it. We all look at one round of football, and we're all making conclusions about Richmond, about other teams, what it means for the flag. It's too small a sample. But
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Cam Lambert was left out of the round one Richmond team this time last year. Like, the seasons evolve in strange and unexpected ways.
Yeah, that caveat made, if you look at Conqueror and Short, they were both getting possessions in the back half. They both had 16 possessions. Short had considerably more metres gained and went at a much higher disposal effectiveness rate. I just think that reflect of Short's a long penetrating kick. He breaks lines. He can run with it. And Conqueror, look, I can see, I was interested. Someone reported Benny had made a speech at an event, and he was asked about who he likes. And he mentioned Short actually straight away, but he said that we haven't seen the best of Conqueror. Now, as you know, I'm selling Reece Conqueror stocks. And that's partly because I just don't think he disposes of the ball very well. But I can see the good bits of him. He got a lot of tackles, and he is strong in the contest.
He did have the odd moment in the centre square in the last quarter as well.
Yeah, he absolutely did. And you sort of expect that from now a veteran player. But he had less minutes gained, and he went at 62%, and Short went at 81%. I appreciate Conqueror brings more in the contested ball, but. Short to me is the guy who could replace Hawley as our backline distributor if he can ever put it together and get his disposal total up. Anyway, so that was my thought on both of those two. But you're exactly right. Neither of them can play tall. It puts more pressure on Vossi, and we lose the Swiss Army life in the backline. What else? And by the way, one other thing I just want to point out while we're talking about the backline is the Advanced Metrics Love Days at Asprey's game. Lots of intercept marks, lots of contested possessions, some contested marks. Yeah, so great game.
Yeah, he played really well. Look, Kurno got away, sort of, he kicked one goal on Nankervis, so I'm not sure how that happened. But yeah, Casbolt absolutely didn't get a sniff against Asprey. Forward, and when the occasional, there was the occasional blip, but the defense settled into its work when it was set. Like there was very little, although there was the occasional mistake from a stoppage, which because Cruiser was putting the ball where he wanted, and yeah, I thought we've got to tighten that up against Jacobs because that was the one thing in the first quarter of the grand final that cost us a bit. So yeah, need to tighten that up.
Yeah, one thing I noticed in the game in general is that Carlton were getting would occasionally get a really nice centre clearance. Something you just, you know, for those of us who've just been watching replays of finals football, you know, it just didn't happen very much in the finals, except, you know, with the example you just mentioned. So it sort of, yes, maybe it was a bit of backline, but yes, it was maybe also that the midfield defence wasn't quite as sharp, and maybe that's partly a product of having Prestia absent, who, if you sort of listen to the club, that Prestia was the one that Dimmer would always single out as being good at defensive positioning and running.
Mm. Yeah, it is actually something I want to talk about. It is very interesting. We tried Corey Ellis on Cripps first, which that's a difficult matchup, and then sort of we use our defensive one wood, which is Jack Graham, and keep that in reserve, and that's in both the grand final and in the Carlton game. That's been part of the reason of,
you know, Nick, there was us a running over Cripps the top so of big, teams in the second half. There was a moment in the game where I genuinely thought where he picked up the ball that I thought it was Casbolt. Both of them so big and also so awkward with it. Of course, it was very naive of me because the thing that I should have realised is the person had the ball, so it was obviously not Levi or Casbolt.
yeah.
We digress. Anyway, anything else about
Look, another problem, it was incredible. They were showing the meters travelled stats for Kane Lambert, and he was just covering an enormous amount of territory, and he just didn't win the ball at all in the first half, which I'd forgotten that was even possible. Because sort of, you know, we've had 5 months of uninterrupted goodness of seeing these players at their worst. It was a little shocking to see them flawed and human as well.
It is. I mean, still on the advanced metrics, had a better game than Corey Ellis, who I know that's sort of picking up a lot of stuff.
Corey Ellis was thoroughly middle of the pack on the AFL ratings, and he did, on the replay, he did do some good defensive work.
He did. I think it says a lot that a guy who's in his fourth year had tied his career, and who's played mostly in the midfield, tied his career best contested possessions with 7.
Yeah, he needs to win more football.
Yeah. There was a moment, there was a chase where both in the third quarter where both him and Grimes were going for the ball, and Corey was actually in front of Grimes. And Grimes is admittedly quicker, but Grimes was so much more quicker because he was running harder than Corey that not only did he run straight past Corey, that Corey peeled off and created an option because Grimes had just shown so much more ability to get to the contest than he did. Anyway, it was a small moment, and more of a credit to Dylan Grimes. But I appreciate Corey's a wonderful kick, and that's why we all have great hopes for him. But still a bit to go.
And actually, well, to let people know when we're recording this, interestingly enough, of the short Ellis Conquer triumvirate, they've all been picked this week with Vlossie out of the team.
Yeah, and yeah, I think once Vlossie got injured, they were probably a good chance to kick the spots, particularly when Prestia, because I think Prestia would have come in for Corey,
and yeah,
one of them would have got dropped.
Yeah, you'd expect so, but yeah, good to have Basher back. I mean, the AFL website is showing Callum Moore as an omission, which is pretty stiff for a guy who didn't play last week.
Yeah, you'd be a bit flat, wouldn't you? All right, I get it. I'm playing in the VFL. I haven't played AFL in 18 months. I don't know how I'm in a mission. I don't believe. Was he emergency?
Yeah, he was last week. He's the change to the emergencies. So they've brought Higgins into the emergencies.
Yeah, so on the midfield, I think there are a lot of business as usual performances. We mentioned Dusty. Cochin was very much the 2017-2018 contested ball, defensive, hard at the ball enforcer. But Nick, you know, we don't often brag on this podcast, but I just like to pump myself up briefly that last week we talked about Josh Caddy becoming a bit of a fan favourite.
Mm.
And you know what? I think it's happening.
Yep, yep. He was strutting on top of the what is it? Style and profile, and he was he had it going on. Yeah, it's a good game.
And he kicked more goals and points, which must have pleased you.
Mm, yeah, also pleasing. Still had an almighty shank in the last quarter, going inside 50. But yeah, good game.
Nick, you know, there was a couple of interesting moments. That was a deliberate shank, but sorry, that was an accidental shank.
Mm.
But both Jack and another player appeared to, because we occasionally deliberately kick mongrel punts into the forward line. We obviously practice it
chaos ball.
Exactly, but there was a few times where they did it to teammates, and Jack in particular did it when he was entering the forward line. He's a very skillful guy, and I wonder whether we practice mongrel punts so often. Oh, that's right. It was Butler kicked that banana goal where it didn't actually spin like a banana. It spun like a reverse torpedo, and it still went through for the goal. And I almost wonder whether we're practicing the mongrels so much that they're getting quite skillful at using them deliberately. Mm. Like, no one used to kick a reverse torpedo deliberately. Either that or he was just incredibly lucky. But I'm just putting it out there that our team potentially is getting very good at what we call them, trick shot kicks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Butler was impeccable in inside 50 with some very difficult shots for goal. Yeah, I thought he had a really good game. And, you know, what else can we say about the glory that is Jacob Townsend?
Okay, can I go to Butler first? I want to talk about Townsend a bit more.
Yep.
So Butler was our second rank player, and you know I love big butts games. And he was great, and he is starting to look next level like. But you know, he keeps that form up. He's an all Australian. Okay, that's taking from his best game, but and he's just icy cold in his set shots. Now Nick, Jacob Townsend. You know, last year was all we were laughing and like we thought they couldn't last. But do we have to start to contemplate the fact that he's for real? Like, he might... Just bear with me for a second, Nick.
No. I think I'm already... Take me on the journey, but I think I'm already at the same destination.
So he's... since he came into the team as a small forward, he's averaging above 3 goals a game for those 6 games. Mm. He's kicked 24. So 20 goals, 4. That's at 83%.
Yep.
As one does, Nick, I looked up Tony Lockett's goal-kicking percentage.
Mm.
It's 70%.
Yeah.
So at the moment, he's kicking more accurately than the widely acknowledged best shot for goal of all time and kicking on track to kick 60 goals. Now, okay, that's obviously unsustainable, but Nick, like, I'm starting to believe that Jacob Townsend might kick 40 goals this year.
Oh, entirely possible. Because if you look at the number of times he was targeted inside 50, and his ability to take marks when he against a decent key back,
exactly
when he only had about a, like that from that beautiful kick by Dusty, where he had a meter of space. No, there was another one of those as well. Like he didn't need a ton of space to be able to take a mark like that. So, yeah, that's it. That's exactly what we need. That's his role. He's effectively the second tall forward, and by any metric, he was quite productive at it.
Yeah. So, Nick, just quickly on the forward line already. By the way, according to the AFL rankings, Justin Castagna had his best ever game of AFL football.
Really?
Yeah. So, there you go. Kick 2 goals, 1. 15 possessions, 7 contested possessions, all good stuff. But I just wanted to quickly on Bolton's game. So obviously he had 6 possessions. Some of them looked magnificent.
Yeah.
And he always looks exciting on the tape, so...
Oh, no. Yeah, he's going to take a mammoth hangout one day.
One reason why I wouldn't have been surprised if he got dropped this week, the Herald Sun's new pressure point stats, which you've heard the AFL coaches talk about, but now being published, which is great, by the way. Butler had 48 pressure points. Castagna had 36. Bolton had 21.
Yeah, he's got to do better than that. And I think there's a pretty clear message in Jack Higgins being an emergency as well. It's yes. A, Higgins played well in the VFL, but yeah, B, Shai's got to do better than that.
Anyone else stand out to you?
Look, another sort of thing to watch for with Shai, he was giving up the front spot inside 50, which when you're already quite a bit shorter, he's got to do better than that. I thought Carlton were pretty well prepared for where Sean Grigg racking, I think, which, you know, maybe we're going to have to... And I thought we adjusted to them being prepared as well. But
well, we actually apparently won the centre clearances when Grigg was rocking. One thing I love, Grigg started to change the angle of attack in the centre square when he was rocking. It's like, you're going to lose anyway. Like, I don't know why you're changing the... Like, you're getting in Cruz's head by moving sideways 3 metres. Like, the only thing I could possibly think he's doing, he's getting out of the way of the big knee that's coming in his direction. Mm. But yeah, anyway, I thought it was nice that Sean Grigg was making an effort.
I know. We tweeted out Jack Graham having a monstrous day pressure-wise, which part of his trademark. Also, speaking of trademarks, Dusty dominating key defenders, which is very much a favourite of this podcast, and doing it to a number one overall pick in the draft.
Oh, very sweet.
Jacob Wiedering was pretty good fun too.
Yeah, there is nothing that Dustin Martin doesn't do fantastically.
Mm. Oh, look, sort of the one...
On field.
I mentioned about who the AFL ratings didn't like, and K-Mac...
Yep, champion data ratings didn't like it at all. You know what I liked about K-Mac's game? Nick?
Yep.
Oh, you know what I liked about K-Mac's? Yeah, do you know what I like about K-Mac's game?
When he monsters dudes?
When he tried to injure Conroe. I really appreciated that.
Hmm. Yeah, he goes in super hard. His kicking needs to be a bit cleaner. I still don't... Like, the AFL ratings had him as our worst player. He had nearly 20 disposals and cracked in hard all day and worked both ways.
So, on K-Mac, yes, the champion data ratings didn't like him so much, but interestingly, he had 19 kicks and 0 handballs. He led our team for metres gained, but he didn't have many clearance. He only had one tackle and low pressure rating, so I presume, and very few contested possessions and low disposal efficiency, so I presume that hurt his game. But, Nick, yeah, you know, it's the AFL rating is the least, is the most variable from game to game. It's very complex, and it does produce some weird results.
Well, look, the one thing, Carlton were very aggressive in using hands at speed to try and break through our zone, and they were occasionally successful with that. And we'll get teams that are quicker and more skillful than that, including this week. So that's a note of concern.
It is, but round one, don't read too much into it.
True. All right, well, prior to round one, I had the great pleasure of watching about the first 2.5 quarters of the VFL, and that was mostly pretty good fun. We have no less than 3 small forwards who every time the ball hit the ground, and while our young key forwards, including Marbio Chol, Callum Coleman-Jones, Callum Moore, all were doing a decent job of bringing the ball to ground. Like our Higgins, Stengel, Baker, all were front and centre every time. And yeah, it was really fun to watch.
Who stood out to you as most likely?
Higgins was the one who, he was both hitting the scoreboard up forward, but also in the midfield rotation as well. So he had the pleasure of speaking very briefly to Francis Jackson as well. And yeah, he was in a very good mood and thought that there were 3 or 4 guys in the team who could step up, and yeah, I think Higgins was one of them. Baker, who I hadn't seen play before, he did some nice things. He's small and slight, but yeah, reads the play well. And Stengel was, as we saw him in the VFL last year, very, very productive. Of the tools, yeah, they're big athletic boys, so there's something to work with all of Noah Bolter, Coleman Jones, and Miller. But they're all going to take some work as well. Just consistency of application, reading the play, pressuring the ball. They're all moments. Because really, several of those guys took a turn in defence, but the one who was clearly a level above was Ryan Garthwaite, and as we've spoken about extensively before, yep, he knows how to play football.
So I kind of mentioned you got quite a lot of love on the official website this weekend. Yep. I must admit,
yeah, deservedly so.
I mean, like, it was good to see it, and they did a great job with the highlights package. They were just okay, his highlights for a guy who was once, you know, a senior regular for reasons we've discussed before. But how did he look on the ground? What did you think?
Well, it was that you would have sort of a scrappy bit of play, and it is the VFL, so you do get those. And then suddenly he'd have the ball, he'd burst through and kick long, and it would look like a slightly different game. So in the context, it was pretty impressive. There were definitely some moments like that. Like Patrick Naish took a while to settle in, but yeah, he did some nice work. And even at VFL level, they try and feed him the ball so he can kick it, which I liked. Sammy Lloyd and Anthony Miles looked above the level, and Ivan Soldo looked exactly as you would expect. So yeah, look, it was a really solid performance and did nothing to stop me feeling pretty positive that we've got both the mix of fringe senior guys ready to go, but also some developing talent there as well.
So, Nick, this week we were scheduled to play the runner-up in last year's competition, but now apparently we're playing some sort of weird cult that's located in Adelaide.
Some weird traumatised cult.
Yes. Yeah. Who, you know, apparently playing the Richmond theme song on loop. how you feeling about the game?
Nervous. As amusing as all the Adelaide chaos has been, we are eight and a half point underdogs, and they play really well at home. So, yeah, I wouldn't get too carried away with feeling smug, although God forbid it's hard not to.
Nick, can I just interrupt you briefly? I just pulled up the Taylor Walker quote about this camp. And I quote, "That camp was one of the most beneficial and rewarding I have been on, and advise all of my best mates, all family members, to do the same thing." Taylor Walker told Triple M. Advise all my best mates, all family members, to do the same thing.
Yeah, that doesn't sound weird and creepy at all. And that at least one star player reportedly wants out of the club as a result of it.
But seriously though, you're exactly right. Look, if you look at this a two series game, it went to the home team, and they actually beat us by more in Adelaide. Everything went right for them that night, but they did flog us. And the thing that they really did well was, because it's a narrow ground, they really closed us up across the half back line, and we were just constantly kicking to 2-on-1s, and they just killed us in contested possessions.
Yeah, and lost in how we brutalised them in the grand final is that they were the number two pressure team in the competition last year, and they were number one at turning turnovers into goals, and a big part of that is playing really well at the Adelaide Oval, like using its long but narrow, and using that lack of width to strangle teams. That's going to be a problem for us.
And you know what other ground is long and narrow, Nick? Kardinia Park.
Yeah, true.
Well, we had the same problem.
Yeah. So yeah, Lever was definitely part of the problem at Adelaide. He's absolutely an elite intercept player. When he's not being brutalised by Jacob Townsend, they've replaced him with their 2015 first round pick, Tom Doty, who's interesting because he's Jake Batchelor sized third defender, but he's had a ton of intercept disposals in the SANFL last year, and did well at that in his debut against Essendon this week. One thing to keep an eye on, though, he's not a particularly good kick, and neither is Hardigan, and Brown as well. So the top of the Adelaide player list, we know. No, they stood up in the grand final. Matt Crouch, Rory Laird, Sam Jacobs, Rory Sloan. They're all really good players, but it was that the second tier that completely cracked under pressure. And if we can get our game going against those guys, there's something to exploit.
My feeling is, this is the great thing about being reigning Premier, Nick. Like, you're just playing these huge regular season games that mean a lot to both sides. I think both sides have had this game circled in their calendar since October, and I think it's going to be an absolute bloodbath. My gut feeling would have gone with them because of the ground dimension, but they've had a few injuries. They've lost players who aren't, and as you say, their replacements aren't as good as they were. Tex Walker is
except for Bryce Gibbs. He's really good.
Yeah, damn it. And he's ex-Carlton, so it's like a double stink of shame. So I'm actually more confident now than I was 2 weeks ago, which is a mistake. You should always look at long-term trends. What do you feel? Gambling is bad, but as a statistical marker, it's useful. What do you think about us as a 7.5 point underdog?
Well, interestingly, it came in from 12.5 after the weekend's game. So it's clearly, they didn't play particularly well Friday night, and yeah, they've got a few guys out.
Lost a game to a team that lost one of its best midfielders.
Mm. Yeah,
and allowed a big comeback. It's not good.
Yeah, to a team one down in their midfield rotation. So yeah, some of the worrying things from the grand final, like big deficit in tackles, deficit in contested possession, deficit in inside 50, all three things that last year they were really good at. That's going to have to be where we exploit them again, and that dominance of ground ball gets from the third quarter. That's how we win. So, but we just can't have the repeat of when we played there last year, where they just dominated us and in the first half, and any thought of a third quarter comeback was pointless.
From the second quarter on, you might recall.
Quarter was fine.
Second
quarter was the problem.
Yeah. That's what made it so disheartening, is we actually started well. But Nick, bottom line for me for this game is, I'm really looking forward to it. It's a really big game, and it's okay if we lose. There's plenty of football left to it. I'm relaxed and happy and looking forward to a game of football.
Yeah, we've got to get back to being stressed and worried. It's the more natural state.
Yeah, I think we're alienating our listener base.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
And Nick, in a first for Richmond Tiger Talk, with all the excitement about discussing Justin Castagna's pressure points, we forgot one of the key things that are happening this week. And for the first ever time, we've decided that it is so important, we're going to add something at the end of the podcast to pay tribute to our captain.
Captain, my captain.
Trent Chincotchin's 200th game.
So, look, we... And you say that we do it rarely, not because we rarely make mistakes, but because as a decidedly amateur effort, we feel like our audiences expect us to have a good, honest crack, and we do, but it's far from perfect. But this was an oversight so glaring it deserved to be rectified.
Exactly. Nick, do you know how long I've loved Trent Cotchin?
I loved him a lot during his under-18 year.
I remember watching him. I can remember watching the game, Vic Metro, where they got flogged by WA, actually, with Alex Rant starring.
Nick
Nanui played in that game, and Cruiser.
And Chimp got tagged out of the game.
By McGarry. McMaster, or what was his? Anyway.
McGinty.
Yeah, something. Who's now out of the AFL. But even then, you could see he had something special.
Oh, the balance, the ability to burst through a pack. Yeah, I remember that. There was a question on his kicking, and there was. I never got too excited about Cruiser because it was just the expected thing that you've got the choice between the midfielder and the ruckman that you'd go for the big guy, and there's not been a single year where I would have rather Cruiser than Cotchin.
Absolutely. And what we forget, there was a big injury cloud on Cotchin's first 2 years.
First couple of years.
And he didn't play his first game in his rookie year until round 8. And I remember someone writing up his first game in the VFL before his debut, where I think it might have been
His first and last game in the VFL.
I think when CC Tiger and Pre described it as, at the end of the game, he went round and shook all the hands of the VFL players and said, goodbye, I won't be seeing you again.
And he hasn't.
And he hasn't. You know, statistically, he was unbelievably dominant in the VFL. And I remember his first game. Do you remember it, Nichols, in the MCG against the Cats?
Yep. Yes, I do.
And we lost.
Another horrible loss.
Yeah. Well, 30 points, not bad by our standards against the Cats. But he had 16 touches and 2 goals, and I just remember he was so obviously the most skillful player on our team.
Yeah.
And suddenly we had hope. It was.
I know. Well, we already had Brett Dilidio, and Brett Dilidio was well on his way to being the 2-time All-Australian that we knew and loved.
But he was never as special as Koch. You didn't look at Lids and say future Brownlow medalist. You said really good.
No,
but
that's true.
You looked at Koch in his first game of AFL footballer. He looked like he might win a Brownlow.
Yeah, he looked like he belonged. I mean, his trials and tribulations have been well documented.
Including on this podcast.
Including on this podcast. I mean, easy to take for granted that I think his disposal rate improved in every one of his first 5 seasons. Like that, he has always been an incredibly mature, dedicated player. You know, he's faced some genuine adversity. His leadership style had to evolve. Like, he got the captaincy young in a team perhaps without a ton of leadership support, and yeah, he had to grow into the job and. Yeah, oh boy, how much he did.
He spent probably 2 years looking like he was absolutely terrified to create a turnover with his possessions. And then, you know, he started so brilliantly, and of course the Brownlow season, which he did deserve to win the Brownlow. He was spectacular in that year. Jode Watson, actually, perhaps with the assistance of a legal substance, was brilliant. But, you know, on most years, Cotchin's, and he won the AFL Players Association award that year, so you know it was a deserved Brownlow for on slightly unusual circumstances. Then of course he had the dip, but who would have thought from that moment, you know, we wouldn't have predicted it in 2008 that Cotchin would become the Luke Hodge captain courageous and sort of be the second on field, be the second banana to the all conquering Brownlow medalist. But you know what, I bet he would look back and just think, you know, he couldn't be happier now, because what a fantastic and interesting career with multiple phases it's been already.
I know. And yeah, it's whatever happens next. Like he's a very good player. He's, you know, I think he's at peace with being overshadowed by Dusty.
Because every other player in the AFL is. Dustin yeah. Martin is the best player in the AFL.
But he's still the unquestioned leader of the team. Yeah, just it's hard to have anything but enormous respect for him.
Yeah, and he's clearly developed that relationship with Dusty, and I love the quote someone said on Twitter this week that I wish for everyone that they can look at anyone like Trent Cotchin looks at Dustin Martin.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Look, and it's one of those things as well that, you know, you look at players who've got the chance to create some real history, and look, he's only 27 years of age. He genuinely has the chance to play 300 games. Yeah, he's great. We love him.
I'm Andy.
I'm Nick. We're Richmond Tiger Tour.
For the strong and the bold who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years, this one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially...
It's just a celebration of all good things Richmond right now.
Nothing that way.
Alex Rance.
He's never not going to go, was he? Was he?
Something fantastic, and we just got to keep riding away.
We're behind the net.